All right, I call the Agriculture, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting to order on February 29, 2024. Representative Tapke will be participating remotely today, which is allowed under Rule 10.05, and this is the same rule that allows our committee to have remote testifiers too as well. So members, today is our second day of hearing a discussion about nitrates. Committee hearing today will be focused on stakeholder input, and we have two bills and proposals about how we can do what we can do at the state to address the issues of nitrates. But first, we have the Minnesota Future Farmers of America are here today. I think earlier this week was FFA Day at the Capitol, so I would like Tyler Ratka and Allison Morrill to come before the committee to identify yourself for the record and to address the committee briefly. And thank you for being here today.
Chair Vang, members of the committee, my name is Tyler Ratke. I currently serve as the Minnesota FFA State Vice President, and I'm originally from Cold Spring, Minnesota.
Members of the committee. My name is Allison Morrell, and I'm currently serving as our Minnesota FFA State Secretary. Really excited to be here today with all of you to talk about Minnesota FFA and the broader reaches that we have to impact our students across the state. There are currently almost 16,000 FFA students alone, and we're expecting that number to grow within the next 5 years. We have over 200 FFA or agriculture education programs within the state, and each of those actually have FFA chapters. We're super excited to be here. This is the future of agriculture and the future of all of our industries, and we get to talk to you a little bit about that today.
Chair Vang, members of the committee, FFA is not possible, however, without agricultural education. So we have over 43,000 students that are taking agriculture classes in high school, and that's really the start of getting involved in agriculture, whether they come from a farming background and want to learn more about their passion, or they want to learn more about where their food comes from and things like that. So a cool thing that my chapter is doing is we had the opportunity to utilize the meat processing grant from the state last year, and we actually just converted a classroom into an area where we can teach a meat science class where students are able to learn about meat processing, whether they want to go into meat inspecting as a career or meat processing as a butcher, or are just interested in learning how they can do their own processing for deer and things like that. So there's a lot of great opportunities in agricultural education, and that's the big start of FFA. Along with that, we have work-based learning opportunities, so students are able to take what they learned in the classroom and go out into a job, learning more and developing more skills. They can also start an entrepreneurship project with their own company. And the final area is doing research, so finding something that they're interested in, researching more about that and conducting an experiment about that. And then the last part of that, our three-circle model that we run by, is FFA. So without agricultural education, FFA is not possible.
Each of us here come with backgrounds within agriculture. Tyler and I specifically, though, come from that agriculture education background. But for me, I truly didn't know what FFA and agriculture education had to offer me until I became involved in it. And I truly saw my future career within that, and thanks to that. And so we're thankful for all of you here today. We just had our agriculture policy experience this last week. And so you might have seen blue jackets all across the Capitol. We're super excited to have about 250 students here talking with their legislators about agriculture, agriculture education, and FFA. And we want to thank you for all of your support.
I don't know if you guys have any questions for us that we could answer.
All right. Any questions or comments from the committee? All right. Well, thank you so much, Tyler and Allison, for being here. I always look forward to seeing FFA at the Capitol, and thank you for all the work that you are doing to represent your students, too. All right, members, next we will go into the crux or the meat of our discussion for today, which is our stakeholder input. I just want to remind the public that we have dedicated about 40 minutes for stakeholders to provide their input on our discussion of nitrates. And we also have two bills in front of us as well. So I would like to have our testifiers who are coming up next for this first 40 minutes of our hearing from our stakeholders to really, if they want to testify for or have concerns or issues of the bills before us, to also include that in their testimony as well. I've also encouraged testifiers to also provide written testimony. That should be included in your handout too. And so with that, we'll get started with our first presentation. This is with Freshwater, Dr. Carrie Jennings, Research and Policy Director. Thank you for being here today. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Vang. My name is Carrie Jennings. I'm a Research and Policy Director at Freshwater, professional geologist, and where I do conduct and compile research to inform our policy. I want to have you reflect on the presentation of Dr. Rosen last week, where he was describing nitrogen, and I want to just emphasize that nitrogen is manufactured to become a more reactive form than what forms in the atmosphere, and you can see by this pie chart where the major sources are. Three-quarters of the source, or more than half, are from agriculture or for agricultural sources. The other are industrial and fuel sources. The increase of this reactive nitrogen has been significant after World War II. As noted last week, there is a small amount that is produced naturally, and you can see on this, the far left of this graph, that prairies and forests are able to convert nitrogen in the soil. This is research from the Department of Agriculture, but by far on the far right-hand side of this graph, you can see that row crops, especially corn, are the main source of nitrogen. This, I thought, was kind of funny because this is a simplified nitrogen cascade. What would the complex one look like? But what we're trying to do is fix nitrogen from the atmosphere and follow those fat blue arrows into the corn crop and into feeds. But all of the other arrows, the only takeaway I want you to see is that how leaky this system is and how reactive nitrogen is and how it gets away by many paths. We're just focusing on the paths to groundwater and surface water, but know that it's an atmospheric contaminant as well. Nitrogen use has also increased as corn acres have increased across Minnesota, and you can see following these graphs from left to right how those parallel lines rise to the right, and also how the surface water concentrations of nitrogen have risen in all of our streams as a result. I think you can probably only resolve the small red arrows. This is at the same time that acres of production of corn are also increasing across the upper Midwest. This means that the load to our rivers from nitrogen is increasing, and these are mostly agricultural sources, and we're losing over 200 million pounds of nitrogen a year to surface water. This is a real cost to farmers. They're losing 90 million a year. This is the graph of nitrogen costs for farmers. A typical Midwest producer probably spends between $50,000 to $100,000 on these inputs. Nitrogen in our environment is either a surface water or a groundwater problem, depending on the geology. The left shows high surface water concentrations. The right shows the Department of Ag's Township Testing Program, where it was high in the groundwater. The middle is the geologic sensitivity, where reds and peach colors are sensitive areas. Tiled landscapes are also sensitive to nitrogen because these tile systems act as conduits to deliver nitrogen from the ground to the ditches and then to our streams. And the presence of nitrogen is also an indicator of other potential contaminants. These data from Dakota County show that there are up to 25 other herbicide compounds detected alongside nitrogen in the groundwater in Dakota County. And if you look at these graphs of Dakota County over time, from left to right on the top row, that shows nitrogen concentrations increasing with time. But if you take a column and go down, that shows how nitrogen is also leaching deeper and deeper into the groundwater over time. Dakota County, by the way, feels a little left out in this whole conversation. But I think what you can conclude along with me is that there's a lot of nitrogen moving around out there in the environment, and we know what works. We know from the practices that the Department of Ag has implemented in southeast Minnesota that restoring land to more perennial vegetation and wetlands does remove nitrogen. So you want to focus on the green and the blue methods, the bars up in the upper top of this diagram, that are successful at reducing nitrogen to the loads that we want to see. The application of nitrogen at the right time, the right amount, the right, the four R's, only gets you so far. And what this really requires is the kind of personalized outreach that the Department of Ag has conducted in the Root River watershed, where you have a person walking the farm and pairing management practices with real-time monitoring, providing those results to the farmers so they themselves can see what actually works. I think the question before you is how to deal with this shared resource that is groundwater. How can the state provide safe drinking water? And the second question is, why are we waiting for groundwater to get worse before acting? Freshwater has priorities that include providing clean drinking water, focusing on sensitive areas, accelerating the use of existing DMPs and conservation programs, leveraging federal dollars where possible, and monitoring those practices to make sure they're actually working. Thank you for your time.
All right. Questions? I will, as much as I appreciate your presentation, I do want to remind the public to respect the decorum of this committee. And so I will take questions from committee members. I think we have time for one or two questions. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for testifying today. We visited the other day electronically. Enjoyed that, and you know, agree with a lot of things you say. And do you think we're making progress? You know, farmers are working hard at it. Are we making progress the way we're doing it, or do you think we need more of a forceful approach to nitrogen management?
Dr. Carey?
Chair Vang, members, I think that farmers want to do the right thing, and I think that efficient farmers don't want to lose these inputs. And I think they are trying to follow the guidance of best management practices coming from the University of Minnesota, that if you just follow those management practices that were represented by the brown bars, you know, the right time, the right amount, the right place, you're only going to get so far. Corn acres, as the one graph of the whole Upper Midwest showed, are expanding. Corn is moving north. So we're getting more corn acres, and that means more nitrogen. So there's a lot to deal with. And I think that farmers might have the best intention, but if it's not the only thing you focus on and you're not right out there in the field at the right time, you know, if you have a kid in a ball game you want to watch or a sick parent, you're not going to be able to manage it in the way nitrogen really requires. It's a very tricky substance to deal with. If you smell it, it's gone. So I think that we can see from the monitoring data that the loads are increasing in our rivers. So that would suggest that despite best efforts, it's not working.
Final follow-up, Representative Anderson.
Just a quick one. Thanks, Madam Chair. Actually, the projections for next year show a nationwide 3 million fewer acres of corn being planted. You know, it's a market-driven based decision farmers make. At least for next year, corn acres will be down.
All right. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Jennings, for being here. We have a lot of programs at the state. There's a lot of federal programs to try to look at soil health and address this problem. I know you can't touch on all the programs, but maybe there's a program or two you could touch on the effectiveness and really the outcomes based of those programs.
Dr. Carey?
Chair Vang, Representative Purcell, I am really a fan of this Root River Farm to Stream partnership and also some of the work of the county soil and water conservation districts like Olmsted, some in the central sand plains, where it's hands-on tailored management practices delivered to the farmer. I think it's a lot to expect a person to come to a website, find what they need to know, follow SABCD on social media and laugh at the soil health memes. I mean, I do that, but that's a little strange. But I do think it needs to be targeted, personalized approaches. I think the Ag Water Quality Certification Program and things like that have already achieved the benefits they're going to after 10 years. They've kind of gotten the low-hanging fruit, and I'm not sure how much farther we're going to get with those approaches.
Final follow-up, Representative Purcell.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Dr. Jennings. So in 1989, there was a Groundwater Protection Act, and it stated, it is the goal of the state that groundwater be maintained in its natural condition, free from any degradation caused by human activities. That's 35 years ago.
Yes.
And if I understand your testimony correctly, it's gotten worse.
Chair Vang, Representative Hansen, yes, and that was the little asterisk here. The 1989 Groundwater Protection Act did have a goal of non-degradation, and that means maintaining the water quality as it is, and it has degraded since that time.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, we'll move on to the next testifier, Minnesota Farmers Union. Oh, I do see one question.
Yeah, if I could.
Dr. Carey, before you move, sorry about that. Really quick, Dr. Representative Nelson.
Okay. The slides they went through, thank you, Chair Vang, for this indulgence. The slides you went through really quick, but there was, you had some, how many pounds of nitrogen? It was like 211 million or something like that.
Yes.
That went rather quickly.
It's this one.
And is that in Minnesota or is
yes.
that in?
Okay. Chair Vang, Representative Nelson,
Dr.
that's
Carey.
Minnesota Pollution Control Agency data. I'm not sure the year on that. I can double check that and find it for you.
Okay.
It's probably not going to be a dry year.
Okay.
Representative Nelson?
I would just kind of looking at, you know, wanting to have an idea on that. So I was wondering if that was U.S. or Minnesota. So, all right, thank you.
Yeah, Chair Vang, Representative Nelson, I think that is a report on nitrogen and surface water with the chief author, Dave Wall, that the Pollution Control Agency did.
Okay, thank you.
All right. All right, thank you, Dr. Carey. Next we have Peter Shagel from the Minnesota Farmers Union. If you can identify yourself for the record and proceed, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Vang, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Peter Schwegel, and I'm here representing Minnesota Farmers Union. I'm our Big Stone County president and our representative on the Clean Water Council, where I've had the opportunity to delve deep into this important issue. On behalf of Farmers Union, I'll start by stating clearly that everyone should have access to clean drinking water. That's a value that we all share. As a farmer, I understand that the choices I make affect water quality, and I know our members in the Karst region and across the state understand that as well. That's a responsibility that we take seriously. You've had presentations from MDA and the Department of Health talking about their near-term strategy for addressing the urgent public health concerns highlighted in the EPA petition, and I want to share our strong support for that work. I'll focus for my time on our long-term work reduce nitrogen in groundwater, and I'll start by talking about some of the changes we've made on our farm as a way to illustrate how farmers across the state are working hard to adapt and address this issue. Since I began farming 12 years ago, I've invested in precision agriculture technology for more precise fertilizer application, developed nutrient management plans following the latest guidance from the University of Minnesota, become an egg water quality certified farm in 2021, been a pioneer by planting forever green crops such as Kernza and winter camelina, and look forward to purchasing a no-till drill this summer after receiving a soil health equipment grant. Time is short, so I won't dive into what all this has meant for our family farm, but suffice it to say that our farm looks very different than it did when I was growing up on it. That said, and as you've discussed, there's still a lot of work to do. Even on our farm, we have a long list of future practices we want to invest in, including grid-based soil sampling and variable rate fertilizer application, no-till planting, and a whole host of crop rotation and cover crop ideas that are just waiting to be tested. Despite our enthusiasm for soil health and clean water, there are barriers too. These include significant upfront financial costs, the need for more technical advisors, and the production risks associated with new-to-us conservation practices. We're a small farm and operate on small margins. Financially, we can't afford to screw up a growing cycle. Clearly, there's lots of important and meaningful work happening in this area, and I know you're hearing two bills today that address this issue. Briefly, on an increase to fertilizer fees, I want to share our concern that this could hit farmers at a time when we're already facing a downturn in commodity markets and making major investments in conservation equipment and practices. It also won't make funding immediately available, because this will take time to collect.
Peter, if you can finish your thought.
Yep. On the second, a tax credit could help generate interest in Minnesota's nation-leading egg water quality certification program, which is such a powerful tool for us to evaluate the decisions we make on our farm in regards to water quality. So happy to be a resource, and please reach out to me if there's anything I can do to help.
Thank you, Peter. Next week have is the Minnesota Farm Bureau. I see President Dan Glessing. If you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed. Thank you.
Certainly. Thank you. Dan Glessing, Service President, Minnesota Farm Bureau, a dairy farmer from west of the Twin Cities. Here to talk about the reduction in nitrates in southeast Minnesota and all across the state. Our members are deeply concerned with this. They drink that water that's under that farmland. But farmers have always been innovative thinkers and problem solvers. And we saw that recently. Farmers kind of gathered in Olmsted County. Over 120 farmers got together to learn more about how they can reduce that nitrate footprint. And that's exactly what farmers do. They problem solve. We also know that we learn every year more data. Some of this is no-till, strip till, updated manure, precision manure application during certain times of year, and precision agriculture, as you heard previously. We know what that crop takes out of the soil each year in an average year and pinpoint and spoon feed that to those plants each year. In regards to HF 4044, we support this. It's a good thing. It's a good way to incentivize farmers to get water quality certified. In regards to 4135, we would oppose it. Certainly have some concerns with fees being assessed during a downturn in the economic, the farm economies. We already have three taxes on fertilizer. It's a quicker way to get results would be having more events like we saw in Olmsted County. Those farmers on the ground are going to get faster results than assessing a surcharge. So with that, I will yield back.
All right. Thank you, President Dan. Next we have is Land Stewardship Project, Martin Larson. If you can proceed before the committee and identify yourself for the record. Thank you.
I don't see my slides, but that's okay. My name is Martin Larson. Madam Chair and members, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Martin Larson. As I said, my son and I farm 1,400 acres of cover crops, small grains, corn and soybeans in Byron, Minnesota. I have a passion for geology and groundwater. I have studied water beneath ag lands for many years. Being an environmental scientist and a farmer has given me a unique perspective into the issue of elevated nitrates in our groundwater. Nitrates began leaking from our farmland nearly 60 years ago as economic forces and governmental policies reduced crop diversity. They are still leaking today, proven by studies utilizing thousands of water quality samples taken from drainage tile outlets and infield directly below the rooting zones using a tool called the lysimeter. The same is proven through my cave drip, spring, and well monitoring. Even with new technology and following all recommended rates, timing, sources, and placement, nitrate concentrations beneath roots of corn and soybeans are still above safe drinking levels. Corn and soybeans lack the physiology to keep nitrates in their rooting zone, and even when using nitrogen application best management practices, we must grow corn and soybeans differently or grow a crop other than corn and soybeans. I ask that we move forward with some specific state policies which ensure the success of the following. incentives for companies to purchase Minnesota-grown small grains and other nitrogen-smart crops. This includes the addition of small grains back into feedstocks for hogs and cattle. Expand the innovative Olmsted County Soil Health Program statewide, which incentivizes alternative crops, hay, grazing, and cover crops. Infrastructure assistance for farmers growing, processing, storing, and transporting diverse products. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for inviting me.
Thank you, Martin. Apologies about the technical issues there, but you still gave a good testimony before the committee. Next we have is the Minnesota Corn Growers, Dana Allen Tooley. I believe she is via Zoom. If you can hear us, if you can identify yourself before the committee and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Vang. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Perfect. Chair Vang and members of the committee, my name is Dana Allen Tully. I currently serve as the president of Minnesota Corn Growers Association, or MCGA. I am the third generation on our family-run dairy and crop farm near Yoda, Minnesota in Olmsted County, where we raise corn, soybeans, alfalfa hay, cover crops, and vegetable crops. On behalf of MCGA's nearly 7,000 family farmers, I want to thank the committee for the chance to testify remotely, as I had a prearranged out-of-state commitment this week. I regret that I cannot be with you in person to discuss this critical issue. The Minnesota Corn Growers Association and corn farmers around the state share the goal of protecting drinking water for all Minnesotans. We are committed to addressing nitrogen challenges in southeast Minnesota and other valuable groundwater areas through partnerships, research, policy, and best management practice adoption. Minnesota corn farmers are investing their own money through the Corn Checkoff into research to discover new technology, tools, and best management practices to make farming more environmentally sustainable by increasing productivity through the use of crop inputs. I would like to begin by addressing a few comments from the informational hearing last week. As a farmer in southeast Minnesota, I think a lot has changed over the years. According to reports on statewide fertilizer sales and yield data from USDA, statewide nitrogen use efficiency has improved over the past 50 years. By reducing nitrogen use from around 1.22 pounds per bushel of corn grown to 0.86 pounds per bushel. Analyzing nitrogen fertilizer sales data in the absence of the amount of corn produced is not a good predictor of groundwater vulnerability to nitrate exposure. There has been acceleration in the adoption of practices designed to protect drinking water. According to the most recent Censure of Agriculture, since 2017, agriculture land with cover crops has increased by 31%. Beyond statistics, there are other indicators of growing interest in soil health that provide multiple environmental benefits, including nutrient loss. Just last Friday, I too was at the Farmer to Farmer led event in Orinoco that brought together nearly 130 southeast Minnesota farmers to learn more about soil health practices and to share their experience. Minnesota corn farmers understand there is more work to do. Last fall, when the EPA responded to the petition filed in April, Minnesota Corn made clear our commitment to the shared goal of protecting drinking water by outlining four areas we have been working on relative to nitrogen use efficiency, with plans to implement new initiatives in these areas moving forward. First, partnerships. We are committed to work with organizations and state agencies to help protect drinking water. We have had initial conversations with the Department of Health about helping Southeast Minnesota private well owners, including farmers, to get their well tested. Minnesota Corn has water testing equipment designed to screen for nitrates in drinking water that can be used at local water clinics.
President Dana, if you can also finish your thought, please.
Second, well, then I would like to move from Our second was research, third was on-farm practices, and finally, supporting public policy. But I would like to bring up two bills. One, MCGA supports incentive-based tools to help accelerate the implementation of practices proven to improve soil health. House File 4044 provides that incentive for farmers to do just that by becoming ag water quality certified. We would also support the use of general funds or dedicated funds such as the Clean Water Fund in order to help the state agency work plan, especially for phase two in response to the EPA petition. Those funds would be more timely and assist state agencies in meeting the objectives set by EPA rather than the approach outlined in House File 4135. We look forward to future discussions with the author. Thank you, Chair Vang, and members, for the opportunity to testify this afternoon on this critical issue for Southeast residents like myself, Minnesota's corn farmers, and our families.
Thank you, President Dana. Next, we have some Minnesota pork producers, Maddie Hokanson. If you can proceed before the committee and identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Vang and committee members. Thank you for allowing me to speak here today. My name is Maddie Hokanson. I am here on behalf of Minnesota's pig farmers. I farm with my family in Goodhue County in the southeast corner of the state, where we raise pigs, beef cattle, cover crops, a multitude of other crops, and as well as corn to feed our livestock. I, along with my brother, are the seventh generation of our family's farm, and we're also proud to be raising the eighth generation with all of our children. Being a multi-generational business isn't just something that happens by accident or by chance. It happens because of intentional decisions made each and every day by the generations, the six of them, prior to us. Decisions like sound conservation practices on our land, using grass buffers, waterways, cover crops, and using land that isn't suited for crop production to raise our cattle on pasture instead, as well as responsible manure management. We apply manure to our land as a natural fertilizer that allows crops to grow and then ultimately be fed back to those pigs and those cattle. It's a natural, sustainable cycle all on its own. We test our manure and our soil to know how much manure each area of land needs and only apply what is able to be effectively utilized by those plants, while we also are able to minimize the risk of nutrient loss. By recycling the nutrients from manure, we reduce our need for commercial fertilizer then. Minnesota pig farmers and across the country, they're embarking on a process to have on-farm sustainability reports that allow us to measure and monitor our own progress towards each of our sustainability goals as an industry, including water quality goals. Continuous improvement is the goal of Minnesota's pig farmers. We live here too. We drink the same water, we breathe the same air as our neighbors do, and we're committed to doing everything that we can to make sure that the environment we're farming in and raising our families in is better tomorrow than it was yesterday. As pig farmers, we support continued investment in projects, including the Livestock Investment Grant Program and the Soil Health Equipment Grant Program through the Minnesota Department of Agriculture that can help farmers continue to adopt best practices that support their farms while also protecting water quality and building soil health. We're supportive of additional resources to further expand those programs and more quickly get farmers best management practices on the ground. Our farm has been farming for nearly 140 years on the same land, and we're committed to doing everything we can to make sure that it can continue for another 140 years. But we aren't the exception. The same story rings true across the state of Minnesota for so many farming families, if you just take the time to listen to their stories. Thanks for allowing me to be here today and tell that story.
All right, thank you, Maddie. Next, we have Friends of the Mississippi River, Peter LaFontaine. If you can proceed before the committee and identify yourself for the record.
Chair Vang and members of the committee, my name is Peter LaFontaine. I'm the Ag Policy Manager for Friends of the Mississippi River, and we work to improve the health of the river and its watershed through a variety of approaches, including critical habitat restoration, land use planning, and of course, agricultural sustainability programs. Years of research have led us to conclude that the most viable and scalable way to solve Minnesota's nitrate problems is through the widespread adoption of market-based continuous living cover farming systems. As many of you know, the U of M's Forever Green Initiative is dedicated to developing profitable winter-hardy annual and perennial crops. By combining these novel crops with traditional annuals like corn and soy, farmers can keep the soil covered year-round. And this approach delivers a wide range of environmental benefits, including clean water, healthy soil, pollinator habitat, all while providing additional diversified revenue streams for farmers. Last year, FMR and our colleagues worked with modelers at an economic analytics firm to produce a landmark report called Putting Down Roots, which is included in your packet. Our goal was to examine the potential environmental and economic effects of increased adoption of continuous living cover cropping systems on Minnesota farmland. And our analysis shows that in a moderate adoption scenario, increasing the acreage grown to such continuous living cover systems would reduce nitrogen loss by 23% in Minnesota by 2050, a really significant share of the reductions we need to achieve our state's nutrient reduction strategy goals. We'd also see a 35% reduction in soil loss under this scenario, along with reductions in greenhouse gas emissions and increased revenues. It's well established that practices like cover cropping work, but we have to make them profitable if we want to reach the majority of producers. In this context, there is a world of difference between something like winter rye or clover and so-called cash cover crops, like the winter oil seeds being developed by Forever Green, which explicitly fill a market need. Our analysis projects 5.5 million acres of winter oil seeds in Minnesota cropland in that 2050 timeframe. The state has spent hundreds of millions of dollars to reduce nitrate contamination, but we have made little progress toward our goals. It's time for a more durable and affordable approach. I encourage the committee to continue to grow your support for efforts, including the Forever Green Initiative, that advance continuous living cover crops across Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Next we have is the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. If you can proceed before the committee, identify yourself for the record.
Chair Vang and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lucas Shostrom, Executive Director of the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. I'm also a dairy farmer, and if you don't know, that almost always makes you a crop farmer also. However, I'll be speaking on behalf of Minnesota Milk today. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. I just want to briefly touch on two programs Minnesota Milk has been active in, one in southeast Minnesota, meaning Winona County and surrounding counties, and one in central Minnesota, where I live, in and around Stearns County. First, I'll talk about a sister company of ours, a 501c3 nonprofit called Farmers for Sustainable Food. We work in dairy areas to improve conservation and help coordinate local, private, and public resources, local studies, and maybe most importantly, teach both farmers and local citizens, politicians, and interested parties what is possible with your local land. So if what I'm talking about today is of interest to you, you certainly are welcome to come out and join these groups. We now have 9 groups, with the first starting in Wisconsin, and the one in Winona County is our first in Minnesota, called the Driftless Area Ag Alliance. Each has different local concerns, and based on the geography, geology, and market, they attack different problems. The Driftless Area Ag Alliance, for example, has held a summer field day last year with about 25 people on a 100-plus heat index day, learning about soil health. And then we also had a fall conference with about 50 people looking at cover crops underneath snow on those couple of days we had snow, and heard from 4 different speakers on soil health, as well as introduced all of our local soil water conservation districts, watershed districts, to help better coordinate and promote efforts with a keynote by NRCS State Engineer Dave Jones. In central Minnesota, we've been working for 5 years with the Environmental Initiative on the Headwaters Area Sustainability Partnership. We've got 4,000 acres in our study there. We are tracking how to show environmental benefits from things like alfalfa alongside their economic benefits to incentivize farmers. However, you should know that in central Minnesota, we're not at all looking at nitrates. It doesn't tend to be a problem there. As you heard last week, it depends on the soil. We are installing practices that certainly help nitrates, but on my farm, where we've spread manure for 35 years and have used commercial nitrogen for only 2 of those years, we have a 3 parts per million well nitrate test. We instill practices that help nitrates, as I said, but depending on the area and the group, it's not a problem. We'd love to create more groups, but farmers are busy, and the early adopters are the ones who've already tried the best practices and therefore most likely to sign up for groups like ours to learn even more. Those middle and late adopters are harder to solicit for these resources. Data collection is probably the most expensive part, especially when you're trying to have a really clean and consistent data set. And of course, finally, money. We found to get most of these groups going, money helps them start, they work hard for about 5 years, and then money doesn't become the problem anymore, because in that local area, we figured out the practices and the programs that will help make those types of farms sustainable. But up front, cost share and experimental dollars are needed. I'm happy to take questions. Also, our policy is consistent to support the Minnesota Ag Water Quality Certification Program and House File 4044. Thank you.
Thank you, Lucas. Next we have is Minnesota Crop Production Retailers Association, Lee Hagan. If you can proceed, identify yourself for the record, and go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lee Helgen. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers. Today with me is Joel. Joel Johanningmeyer. I think I get that straight one of these times. The crop production retailers play an important role working with and supporting farmers and growers in Minnesota. We provide the consulting advice as well as selling the crop inputs that they need to have happy, healthy crops that are productive and support Minnesota's economy. Today, we're going to have a presentation from Joel with Ag Partners, who is one of the major co-ops in the southeast Minnesota area, and they have the advanced yield system, which is a way that we're trying to bring precision agriculture to the farm fields and working with the farmers and growers. I think this will be a useful presentation for you, and then once he concludes, I have some specific comments on House File 4135 related to the fertilizer tax and some of our concerns with it.
All right, if you can keep it really concise.
Yes, I will. Thank you. And I believe you have slides with you as well. So thank you, Chair Vang, and the rest of the committee. So Advanced Yield Systems is our precision ag program. Here, each dot represents a field within our program. It's a set of growers that we work with really locally, drive discussions locally. One of the things that we'll talk about today is nitrogen management. And I went back over the course of when we've had this program. And currently in 2023, we had 57.8% of the fields that had multiple applications on there. So getting the right product, right rate, right timing for our strategy, we are executing on that with this group of growers and trying to manage that as well. I'll go through this briefly, but we've heard about nitrogen use efficiency. This speaks to that. So our growers have been in the program, have been well below benchmark over the course of the last 10 years. And basically, it's a simple equation, total nitrogen divided by the amount of bushels you get. So the more bushels you get, the better utilized. So how do we approach that from a precision ag standpoint? We know that there's variability within field. Each field is different. So we identify the areas of the field and create management zones around there. You know, what's our higher productivity, what's our lower productivity, what's our average, and then we start to manage those differently. One of the ways we've started the last 3-4 years to manage is actually measuring soil nitrate in the soil. So we pull grid cores, so we go out in the field and pull samples, and it tells us how much nitrogen, how we can manage to it. So we do a better job of utilizing what's already out there versus what we need to apply. And then at the end of the day, we measure that with our growers, and and then talk through what worked, what didn't work, what we're going to change. So, and finally, quickly, we are starting to use randomized, replicated lots within our trials. It's not just simply going out there and seeing, strip trials in the past. This is actually getting more scientific in how we can help with the determination.
All right. Lee, I know you want to say a couple words before the committee, so I'll give you that 1 minute to address the committee.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Ag retailers are the folks that would be collecting the proposed sales tax, and we do collect the fertilizer taxes now. So we have thoughts about both the implementation and the practicality of what's there. First, I would say that there's not necessarily a compelling nexus in the policy between a statewide fertilizer tax and allocating funds for a very specific, narrow geographic private wells. There's not a policy nexus there. If it is public health concerns, which we all kind of share, then general obligation bonds, public facility authority funding, clean water funding are all appropriate responses and funding sources, but the fertilizer fee is not. The proposed 99-cent fee and the escalators that are built into that are a defective policy approach. You will actually change the incentives to become a disincentive. So if we use more tonnage because we've switched to what Joel had showed as a split application, where you may have more applied as tonnage, but the actual amount of nitrogen is being reduced because you're being more efficient with it, this would create a disincentive on that. So I think we want to examine that and find better tools that would help the ag retailers implement precision agriculture as Joel described.
Thank you, Lee.
I have specific concerns on the bill.
Mr. Lee.
If you look at the fee that's in there, that's...
Your testimony is up, so we will proceed with our next business item.
Madam Chair, this is
my apologies. We are very strict. We have limited time. Lee, I am the chair, and your testimony is done. Therefore, we will move on to our next. You can provide written testimonies to our members afterwards.
I would Thank you, Lee Helgen.
Please respect the committee's time. We will move on to the next bill. First bill for this committee is Representative Hansen, House File 4135. Oh, as Representative Hansen moves before the committee, we'll do approval of the minutes. Vice Chair, do you have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move to approve the minutes from our previous meeting on February 22nd.
Representative Purcell moves to approve the minutes for February 22nd, 2024. All those in favor? Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion prevails, and the minutes for February 22nd, 2024 are approved. To the bill, House File 4135, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House File 4135 and have it be re-referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee.
All right. Representative Hansen moves to refer the bill to the Environment Committee. We also have an author's amendment, the A3 amendment. Can you move and also discuss your amendment, Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd move the A3 amendment to get the bill in the shape I would like. If you will look at the A3 amendment, it's on page 3, line 17. And what it does is it provides an escalator. We are extending in the bill the AFRAC account current fertilizer fee for 1 year, and then that 40 cents would go, that fee would be charged on anhydrous ammonia. We've had testimony today as well as in the previous days. There are different types of fertilizer, and some are more leaky than others. Anhydrous not only is fairly leaky depending on the soil temperature, but also is fairly hazardous in terms of personal risk. So not treating all nitrogen fertilizers the same. That is the A3 amendment. And I ask for your support to get the bill in the shape the author would like.
Discussion to the amendment. Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, are there any research being done that urea, for example, does not pollute, does not leach into the groundwater? Why are you specifically look at it at anhydrous as you move this bill forward?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Anderson, as I just mentioned, I'm not saying one doesn't or does. I'm saying that anhydrous ammonia is more leaky. You're applying the liquid nitrogen to the soils. The microbial activity, depending on the soil, on the heat of the soil temperature, you have a potentially quicker conversion with anhydrous ammonia than you do with the solid or the other forms. In addition, anhydrous ammonia is riskier, as you know. We have to handle anhydrous ammonia a lot differently in terms of personal protection and safety. So I'm saying those are more. It's not an either-or.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative, those of us that apply anhydrous in the fall, we do not apply it until the soil temp is below 50 degrees. We also use a stabilizer. And I would also add that a couple of years ago, one of the first years of our drought, I put on my nitrogen in the spring, urea, dry applied. We didn't get much rain that year, and I'm not sure that any of it got worked down into the soil, so maybe it could have been more losses that way than with anhydrous. At least anhydrous is in the ground, and if it's done correctly, I think it's an excellent way to apply nitrogen, and I'm just a bit puzzled why you are singling out one product over another when they all contain the same basic ingredients.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Anderson. In discussions with the fertilizer dealers, they brought up a good point, and it was also referenced here about nitrification inhibitors. And what I'm looking at doing in future committees is maybe waiving that 40 cents if you've been using a nitrification inhibitor. There are brand names, as you know. I'm not going to say those right now, but there are nitrification inhibitors that are there. And so when you're looking at anhydrous ammonia to incent good behavior, you could waive that fee if you're using it. That's my intent. I'm on the record here if you are using the nitrification inhibitor.
All right. Any further discussion? All right. So all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say nay.
Nay.
The ayes have it. The 8-3 is adopted. To the bill, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the bill as amended, members, we've had, I think, really good testimony both last week and today. It shows, and I see a common ground about a need to be addressing the nitrification public health crisis that we're facing. Some common questions that have arisen, and I think to put in context why we're looking at the nine counties. We currently have the petition that has come before us about the nine counties where there's karst. There is karst elsewhere in other counties as well. But right now we have the petition that talks about 9,000 families with drinking water at risk. Those 9,000 members are more than the membership mostly in the organizations that have testified already. 9,000 people. It has been a long journey with the Groundwater Protection Act of 1989. Minnesota has probably done more than any other state. And I meet, and we meet, Representative Anderson, we meet with folks from around the country. We've probably done more than anybody else, both in terms of money and in policy. But it's not working. And that approach where we was interesting hearing much of the testimony, has come with massive public investment. And the proposal from the state agencies and from the Clean Water Council is continued public investment. And so what I am proposing with 4135 is essentially a personal responsibility proposal. It's a proposal to meet the needs of the drinking water crisis that we have. That does not ignore that there are problems, and I'm not ignoring there are other problems with coarse textured soils and other portions of the state. But setting up the fee on nitrogen fertilizer and having it ongoing would make things available for the response and remediation for the drinking water crisis. I think it is appropriate, as we have done, to use public funds for incentives to manage fertilizer, whether that is taking land out of production in the short term or long term, providing cover crops, reducing or eliminating use on extremely susceptible soils, and managing all of our nitrogen better, looking at whether it comes from legumes or manure or commercial fertilizer, taking those things into account. I recognize there's great opposition to this bill. I expect that. But I also, as I've told a number of the interests, that I view a bill moving forward as a journey, and that I'm willing to take testimony and input and ideas and build the bill as it goes through committees. What the bill does, if you look in Section 1 and Section 2 and Section 3, it actually defines some of the fertilizer types for nitrogen fertilizer. These statutory definitions are not currently in law. Definitions make a difference, whatever we're doing, and it's important to have these definitions in the law. When we look at the fee, we currently have a fee on fertilizer, and that goes to the AFREC board. It's a board of the stakeholders that determine how to distribute money for production research. You know, it's interesting, as this journey started a few months ago, talking about the feed, my social media feed has had a number of Africa is awesome Facebook ads appear. It's kind of interesting. I think AFREC has served its purpose. It is production agriculture. It is not designed for water quality. I think anticipating when we look at where the amendment comes, and then also where I believe the retailers were looking at, how does the fee actually get applied? And so currently the fertilizer fee, and Mr. Sullivan can correct me if I'm wrong on this, you look at the previous year. So receipts are provided and the tax is paid on July 31st. Mr. Sullivan, is that correct?
Mr. Sullivan.
Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, that's correct. That's Minnesota Statutes 18C.421.
Representative Hansen.
So for fertilizer sold or distributed between July 1, 2023 and June 30th, 2025, the person required would pay the private drinking water fee. There was testimony earlier about how we could not apply, we would not have money quick enough. If money was appropriated from either the Clean Water Fund or the General Fund, it wouldn't become available until July 1 of this year. These fees would have an application where they come in and would be collected on July 31st of 2024. With the amendment, what we did is we took the 40 cents that was going to AFREC. We would keep AFREC going for 1 year. That allows the research to be continued and completed, recognizing that there are people working on projects, and rather than having an abrupt stop, it leads for a soft landing for those researchers and to complete the work that they are doing. The fee would go in, and it would go be collected by the Department of Agriculture, and it would go to community health boards in the 9-county area. And I am open to expanding that to other karstic areas within the state. It would require reporting. It provides a sunset on this. I actually do like sunsets. I think they cause things to be looked at again. And if you look on the private drinking water assistance program, that's where the funds would go. And it also defines what they could go for community health boards. It would assist residents in obtaining safe drinking water when the documented level of nitrate in a resident's private drinking water well is more than 10 milligrams per liter. The community health boards, which are local in your counties, would make those decisions and provide that assistance from the money that is collected. Section 14, analysis and report, and just to step back a bit, the community health boards would require that the bill goes to the health committee, so Representative Liebling's committee, after if it passes out of the environment committee. And then the path would bring that bill back here to the ag committee, because the fertilizer fee is a jurisdiction of the ag committee. I, again, to my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, I commit to you to continue to work on this. I know you have concerns. As I said before, I look at building a bill in committee to see if there's something that we can achieve. The reason going to the Environment Committee is the PFAS and biosolid report. Yesterday in the Environment Committee, we heard PFAS. We have, I think, members in the general public have heard about fertilizer impacts from sewage sludge, particularly on farms in the northeastern part of the country. And so when we're looking at fertilizer that is coming from sewage sludge, we also, it's not just a nitrate issue. We want to look at the potential impacts of PFAS and their potential accumulation on fields as a result of fertilizers. And that is the bill 4135 as amended.
Okay. Before we move to questions and additional testifiers, we have two more amendments. I see the A1 amendment. I believe, is it Representative Anderson? Will you move the amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Anderson moves the amendment, and if you can speak to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What the A1 amendment would do would be to just stricken the Section 14, which Representative Hansen just mentioned. And I appreciate your telling us that the bill is going to come back here. We were very concerned about that. And it kind of seemed to us that possibly the reason this was in here was to get it into your committee or health, then we wouldn't see it again. So I appreciate you telling us it will come back. But other than that, you know, we all agree here, we have a full committee room, that the nitrogen water situation is a big issue. A lot of people care about it. We all want to have clean drinking water. And it just seemed that bringing in the PFAS was a whole another arena with which we could enter into. And to me, it in a way diminishes from the impact of looking seriously at this nitrate situation, water quality situation. So that was the reason I moved to have this section taken out, so we could concentrate just on the nitrogen and make sure the bill would come back here. So that would be my amendment, Madam Chair. And I would call for a roll call vote.
Okay, roll call being requested to the amendment. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I would oppose the amendment. I think it's important to be looking at these contaminants. Yesterday in environment, we asked about the synergistic effect that happens with PFAS. There is more research relating to nitrates and their potential consequences in terms of cancer. When you have a variety of contaminants working together, what does that mean? So I would oppose the amendment. You know, Representative Anderson, that will go to the Environment Committee. We've had those discussions on PFAS there. Then it would be heard by our committee. The intent would be to be dealing with that in my committee. So I think there will be other people. There's quite a few PFAS bills. So.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, thank you again. And just this may not be a question for this Ag committee, but the question becomes, what do we do with this stuff? I mean, right now it's a thin spread on, I assume, a lot of ag acres, and hopefully a lot of it dissipates, but we're talking a lot of volume, a lot of tonnage, and landfills aren't really, I guess they're going to have to go there. So what do you see as far as what's going to happen to this stuff?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Anderson. I think the first step is to see if we have a problem, you know, and to start looking. You know, that and how big it is. In other states, it's a big problem. And I've heard testimony from farmers in the Northeast and the concerns they've had and what they've been able to do and not do on their farms anymore. So I think it's time for us to start looking. You know, it's not just on the farmland. Milorganite, if you go to your hardware store and buy Milorganite, a bag of that, that's sewage sludge fertilizer. So we need to start looking at this. Other states have been doing it. I don't know what the answer is to that, but I don't think that should prevent us from starting to look.
Representative Anderson? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, you mentioned briefly that you would be open to expanding the geographic area. I did not get an amendment in on time, but I would just love to hear you on the record say that perhaps you would consider a friendly amendment similar to the amendment I submitted for House File 4044 to include the sections of Dakota County and Rice County that are also a karst topography.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, the speaker has put the Ag Chair on the Environment Committee and the Environment Chair on the Ag Committee, and you're also on both. So you can move amendments in that committee. Yes.
All right, Representative Purcell. Okay, further discussion to the amendment, to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, the clerk would take roll call.
Chair Vang?
No.
Vice Chair Purcell?
No.
Lead Anderson?
Aye.
Representative Burkle?
Aye.
Representative Cha?
No.
Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Harder?
Aye.
Representative Jacob?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Ream?
No.
Representative Centermura?
No.
Representative Tapke?
No.
there being 6 ayes and 7 noes, the A1 amendment does not pass. The next amendment that we have is the A2. Who offers this amendment? Representative Anderson, if you can move your A2 amendment.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. This one's a better one. Anyway, what the amendment does is, again, go after a piece of the bill that I don't think really has a direct connection to what we're talking about again. The inspection fee is for just that. And in your move, Representative Hansen, to look particularly at anhydrous, I think a lot of the fees, inspections now go to anhydrous toolbars, tanks, that type of thing. And to increase the fee by up to 59% is, and again, you know, we're talking cents here, pennies, and you say, well, it's a really small part of a price of a ton of fertilizer, but it's still a cost, and it still is a large increase to farmers. And it was just a year ago that I think the legislature gave the Ag Commissioner the authority to increase the fee by up to 5 cents and not hold a public hearing. And now you're increasing the fee by 59%, taking the authority back from the commissioner and just doing it really unilaterally. So I would ask members to look at this amendment, page 3, line 4 through line 7. And we're in this rush to increase fees here. And I've been trying to follow the footprint of all of these fee increases, and it's tricky. You know, one fee ends June 30th of next year, then the other fee kicks in on July 1st, and the end result is $1.39 fee on anhydrous by July 1st of 2025, with the AFRAC fee literally going away. And that was one fee that was really supported by agriculture, and that's going to be going away for research, education into the uses of fertilizers like nitrogen. And again, I think your language here on page 3 is a little bit of an overstep, and I would like to ask the department how they feel about this fee increase, if they're ready to handle it, the increased costs of them handling some of these additional fees, and hear what they want to have to say about this, Madam Chair.
Okay. Before we invite the department, I'll refer to Representative Hansen first to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would oppose the amendment. You know, with anhydrous ammonia, you're dealing with one of the most hazardous products that can be used both on the farm but also by the workers that are dealing with it at the co-ops and the dealerships. If my memory is correct, last year the department came with a proposal for increasing the fee, and the statute that's there with the agreement on giving the commissioner some very limited authority was a result of the conference committee agreement. I think it is important to provide that safety in there. President Anderson would continue to work with you and look at this to see what's there, how to make sure that we're providing that protection relating to the use of anhydrous ammonia. But I would oppose the amendment at this time unless we're no vote.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I see Commissioner Peterson from the Department of Ag, if you can answer Representative Anderson's questions before the committee. Thank you for being here. If you can identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members, Tom Peterson, Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I think, you know, to the fee increase, part of the increase is actually what we did propose last year. And again, looking at last year was a budget year and looking at our structural balances and the programs that we need to deliver, like within the department, was why we had brought that forward last year. I think, you know, as we looked and talked with folks, they have some pushback at that time. Fertilizer prices had started to come down. But I think now this year, then you have crop prices heading the other direction. So I think there's always that concern. I think as we're trying to look at, you know, we haven't taken a position on this yet. I think we're looking at some of the mechanisms that's being delivered, because you actually have the fee rising and lowering in a few different places. Keep in mind, we also, besides AFRAC, we have ACRA. We have, different deliverables there. So I think that, we'll continue to work with the author on some of the mechanisms that are in this, and then how the dollars would actually flow. We may have some concerns or ideas about that. So, and then, as the committee looks at programs and things, we wanted, as we release our budget in the coming weeks, we'll have more to say about this and deliverables that we want to work on in Southeast Minnesota. So at this time, we don't have a position. We did raise the fee, the 5 cents that we did. I don't like to raise fees. That's a hard thing to do as commissioner. It's very popular. So, but we did. And looking at it, we do need some dollars in that position. I would say, we would probably be looking at having to do that again this next year at some point, just because of costs that our department has and programs and staff and things that we need to deliver. But, we'll continue to work with the author and the committee on this.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I forget, I'd request a roll call on this.
A roll call being requested.
And, here we are talking about fee increases, and again, the cents are not large in and of themselves, but I think, frankly, farmers are getting very concerned about what's happening in the ag economy. The price of corn is half what it was a year ago. Soybeans, much the same thing. And just the optics of increasing a fertilizer inspection fee by nearly 60% is not the optic I want to send to the farmers of Minnesota. So, Madam Chair, I would encourage a yes vote on the amendment.
All right. Any further discussion to the A2 amendment? Seeing none, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Vang?
No.
Vice Chair Purcell?
No.
Lead Anderson?
Anderson, aye.
Representative Burkle?
Burkle, aye.
Representative Shaw?
No.
Representative Frederick?
No.
Representative Hansen?
No.
Representative Harder?
Aye.
Representative Jacob?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
Aye.
Representative Ream?
No.
Representative Sensor-Murrah?
No.
Representative Tapke?
No.
There being 5 ayes and 8 noes, the nays have it. The A2 is not adopted. Next, we have, I believe we don't have additional testifiers. Are there any new testifiers for this bill? Seeing none, we'll go with the discussion to the bill. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Vang. And Representative Hansen. I have a series of questions, I believe. I'm sure you're well aware of fee increases and how that is very irritating to our bottom line. And the higher that these fees go and the cost of farming, then we wonder why farmers no longer farm. And that's very concerning. So Lee Helgen, was at the table, and he had a number of things to say, and I would like him to come back down and to finish what you had to say, please. And can you please go through the process of collecting the fees that you use on the fertilizer?
Representative Harder, with respect to our committee time, we have 15 minutes, and I believe we also want to hear Representative Jacob's bill that's next to this, so I will not allow any more further testimony, but if you have questions to the bill author, I will continue that discussion. Representative Harder.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Vang. I'm not sure if you can answer this question or someone from the department needs to come, but we have a number of programs out there, grants, low-interest loans, for all sorts of things. Do we not have any of these items that can use for wells? Like, for example, there are loans out there for people to replace their septic systems. They're failing, whatever. A lot of times they're low-interest loans. Instead of increasing these fees, do we not already have options out there that landowners can utilize?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Harder. We do, but those are all paid by the general fund. That's the issue. You know, there was discussion earlier about who pays? Who pays for this? And for 35 years, my constituent, everybody's constituents have paid for this. And that's not working. It's not working. And the result is requests for more money. Now there's going to be federal money coming as well. The cost to replace a well is substantial in the Karst. Because you're going to have to go deep. So the money, even the money that's there, I mean the ratcheting of the cost to the general public, whether it's legacy dollars, whether it's general fund dollars, whether it's bonding dollars, can't really bond on the private wells. We haven't even started talking about the public infrastructure. We can talk about the city of Hastings and what they've had, or what we've paid for Hastings. As we've taken trips in the bonding committee, the nitrates are an issue with public water systems as well. So the public cost, what I'm doing in 4135, is again, personal responsibility. If you are the private business of farming, we have externalized your cost. Some, particularly on the health impacts.
Seeing how we have about 15 minutes left of committee, so I will just allow members two questions each. Final follow-up, Representative Harder.
I just, from working in county government, there are plenty of programs out there that certainly this department or other departments, Minnesota Department of Health, can allocate those funds for this specific reason, rather than creating new avenues to collect money. We already have money there that they can reallocate that. I would consider or request the department to look at that rather than raising fees. The other thing, I think the department needs to get to me, give information to me, but I'm just curious with all this data that we have and where the nitrates are, is there any data of nitrate concentration on land that is rented versus run by the property owner, and perhaps the department can give information on that.
Is it the department or Commissioner Peterson, if you can answer Representative Harder's question, or Representative Hansen?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Harder. I don't know if we have the data, but I think there are differences between the landowners and renters. I think 40 to 50% of the land is rented rather than having owner operator. And so I think our approach, and this is something when we're dealing with management, is how do you target information and programs to the decision maker? And who makes the decisions on the management? I think there's also been change over the years in terms of who's on the landscape. As the greatest generation passed away and the land was distributed, there were auctions. I've been to them. I'm sure you guys have been to them. Often the building site is carved out, the 5 acres, the 10 acres. And so they don't own the farmland around them. They're rural residential. They don't have control of the land.
Representative Jacob. Commissioner Peterson, I see you approaching the desk. If you can quickly answer Representative Harder's question.
Yep. Madam Chair, members, Tom Peterson, Commissioner. We don't have that data, and so the one thing I would say is that we know, though, that with the new ag census that came out, that more than half of the land in Minnesota is not farmed by the person that owns that land, and so there is a lot of rented land. And then real quickly, you know, our department does have the Ag BMP loan program. We do have EQIP and other things that we do for wells, and I think that'll be important for this discussion as the committee looks and considers what are the best things that we can do, and so we'll get that information to you.
Representative Jacob.
Thank you, Chair Vang. So we've discussed that nitrogen clearly takes, or could take decades to get from application on the surface into groundwater and into wells. And the new nitrogen rule, not even having 5 years yet to potentially solve that problem or see the results from of potentially solving the problem. And I'm assuming your language in your bill, it doesn't exempt anyone, right? I mean, doesn't matter who the farmer is, everyone would be required to pay these fees. So since we know that there's such a lag in between the application and the resolution of the problem, do you feel, as an author, do you feel it's fair to make the farmers of today, and including BIPOC, small emerging farmers, and the farmers who are probably the solution, who are working on the solution for this, to make them pay for what you feel are the sins of the farmers from the 1970s, 1960s. And again, those farmers at that time, they didn't know that there was a connection. They just knew our corn is yellow. We add nitrogen, it makes it blue and healthy. We can provide a better value to the consumer. They were trying to do the right thing then. We're trying to do the right thing now. But do you feel it's fair to charge, and including small BIPOC emerging all farmers for the sins of the farmers in the 1970s?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Jacob. I think it's really important to address this question, the idea of old water and new water. I don't think that's a proven fact. I think when you're dealing with, it's not all one or all the other. There's been research that's current and old about dye tests that move water very quickly in the karst. It can move through the sinkholes, through the trout streams, be groundwater. It can move very fast, or it can move very slow. But it's not one or the other. It's kind of like what, you know, the argument here would be like, well, we shouldn't limit stack testing and air pollution because the air is old and it's going to mix together. Nitrates are very soluble in water. Phosphorus, as we heard last week, adheres to the soil. What we've seen over the last few decades, we used to not think nitrates were a problem in surface water. We used to think it was only a groundwater. But now we see that it has an impact on surface water and groundwater because the loading is so much. We watch the water bounce, the concentration bounces. So whether it's old water or new water, it's not an either or. This is not what our grandparents did versus what we're doing now. What this bill does is it takes us, each one of us, to have responsibility who are applying that fertilizer. That means me on my land as well.
All right, we only have a couple minutes left, and there's a list of members, so I'm going to move on to Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Vang. And just quickly, do you know the total amount collected right now under the fees on the fertilizer tax?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Nelson, I think, if my memory is correct, the 40 cents on the ton that goes to AFRAC per year raises about $1 million. So the 99 cents that's proposed would raise roughly, give or take, $3 million. There is fluctuation each year. If you add the aggregate off the top of my head, I could not give you that right now, but that gives you some idea of what the range is. And the department could correct me if I'm wrong. Roughly, they're nodding and using their thumbs up.
Final follow-up, Representative Nelson?
Yeah, and I thank you for that. As looking at, you know, there's roughly 8 counties. I know you're open to a little bit more than that. And, you know, there's about 87 counties in the state. Now, not every one of them is a same intensity of agriculture in it. And the fertilizer application is less, especially like the boundary waters, obviously. But, you know, we've got a large area of the state that, you know, these funds are going to be going to a 8-county area. And there's kind of a disparity there of everywhere else is paying for an area. And, you know, you've said several times you're worried about general fund dollars because you don't want the rest of the state paying for what's happening in southeast Minnesota, but that's kind of what this bill does.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Nelson. So having this be an ongoing fee, what we're doing is trying to approach the worst first. There are differences up where Representative Burkle is and that thick clay in the Red River Valley. Groundwater contamination is not so much of a problem. But there may be sandy areas along the Minnesota River, coarse textured sands where a well may be. So this problem, as we saw on the one map, is state. There are different areas depending on the susceptibility of soils. So the reason I'm looking at the $3 million what is raised here, I'll go back to the Clean Water Fund. That was what the Department of Ag and others had looked at in terms of what they wanted to spend with the Clean Water Fund for remediation. I don't believe, and there's a Senate Legal Counsel memo as well, that the Clean Water Fund can be used for remediation. It's supposed to protect water quality and not risk. And so these issues that are laid out here, $3 million a year would deal with the worst first. That's why I have a sunset in that, because then there's a future legislature can decide whether to continue that. But deal with the worst first, protect the public health first in that nine-county area where we have an EPA petition and federal government response required. And then we can look at those other areas as well.
Representative Anderson.
Be quick, Madam Chair. First, I'd like to request a roll call on bill passage.
A roll call being requested. Representative Anderson.
Talking to folks at AgriGrowth last night, there's a group in Olmsted County, Farmer Conservation Group. They met, it was mentioned on the video testimony, 136 people showed up, mainly farmers, to work on better ways to improve their techniques of farming. The appetite is there. They're talking about one thing that really interested me was third crop using oats as a crop in the making it a three crop rotation. You know, oats requires little fertilizer, wouldn't have issues of any nitrogen runoff. So I think it just bothers me that, as was mentioned here many times, farmers are doing the best they can. Techniques are improving. We heard the testifier from Big Stone County. I wrote him down someplace. All the new techniques that they're using. Precision, soil testing, applications, variable rates, and we're working at it. And we don't have baselines to know how much we've improved or disproved in the last 10, 15, 20 years. And I would much rather encourage the incentive approach to this than the required fee. And I would encourage members to vote no on this bill passage.
Right, further discussion to the bill. Closing remarks, Representative Hansen.
I would just ask for a yes vote. The bill is going to continue on its journey. There's work to be done, and I invite you to assist in that process.
Representative Hansen, hearing no further question, Representative Hansen renews his motion to refer House File 4135 to the Environment Committee. The clerk would take the roll.
Chair Vang.
Aye.
Vice Chair Purcell.
Aye.
Lead Anderson.
Anderson, no.
Representative Burkle.
Burkle, no.
Representative Cha.
Aye.
Representative Frederick.
No.
Representative Hansen.
Aye.
Representative Harder.
No.
Representative Jacob.
No.
Representative Nelson. Representative Ream?
Aye.
Representative Sensenbrenner?
Aye.
Representative Tabke?
Aye.
There being seven ayes and six noes, the motion prevails and House File 4135 is referred to the Environment Committee. Members, our time is up. My apologies, Representative Jacob. We will hear your bill in the next committee hearing. So thank you for your patience and apologies on that end. I always try to make sure we finish all our business items on time, but because this is a very important discussion, I've allowed a lot, been really gracious with the time that we have here today, and we will continue to have more discussions on this. Moving forward throughout session. So thank you all for being here today, and this meeting is adjourned. Our next committee hearing is on Tuesday, March 5th. This meeting is adjourned.